the parent's communication style is one of the biggest factors that is going to influence the closeness of that relationship. Not just when we're talking about the easy things, but when we're talking about the difficult things, that's when being attentive to your style is even more important, because that's when we're at risk for blowing it.
That's Dr. Todd Cartmell, and he's reflecting about the importance of engaging your child in good conversation. Todd has more for you today on Focus on the Family with your host, Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
You know, John, as parents, we want to maintain a healthy relationship with our children. I know as you and I talk about our parenting journey, being dads, that's true.
It's hard but worth it.
It is hard but worth it. The days are long, but the years are short, right? But sometimes it can be hard to know what to do exactly. You know, kids are all unique, and we're not sure when they're throwing those temper tantrums how to manage those things. You know, Gene and I, with our foster experience, we have back in our home now a 3- and 5-year-old. I'm in my 50s. So that's been a real eye-popper for us, because our teen boys, you know, they're through most of that stuff. They still have their own way of throwing a tantrum now and then. But, you know, we're just in awe of the energy it takes to deal with 3- and 5-year-olds, at least. We had forgotten about it. It's like birds in a nest chirping all day long. Help me, help me, help me. But we want to talk today about some very practical ways that you can apply in those circumstances where your children may be, you know, a little out of control. And we've got 8 simple tools. And you love that, 8 simple tools for raising great kids with Dr. Todd Cartmell today.
And he is a clinical child psychologist. He's written a number of books, including the one you just mentioned, Jim. And Todd and Laura live in the Chicago area and have 2 grown sons.
Todd, let me welcome you to Focus on the Family.
Hey, thanks, Jim. John, great to see you guys.
Hey, I'm thinking about, what was that old show where they used to ask the kids the questions?
Art Link Letters. I was young when that came out,
but I remember the darndest things, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
See a lot of children. I mean, that's your vocation. You are a child psychologist. What's some of the most interesting things a child has said to you?
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, I do see a lot of kids. I mean, as little as 3 and, you know, up into, you know, college age guys and girls. And well, I'm not sure what the most interesting thing is.
What do they say to you that they won't tell their parents?
Well, that's sometimes that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
You know, there's times I can think of a few kids where, you know, we've been talking about something and they're telling me something, and, you know, maybe they've seen me 2 or 3 times. And, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's pretty important, something that happened with friends or something they're feeling about a relationship, like with their dad or something not going well. And the first thing I'm thinking of is, well, I wonder if they've, you know, talked to their parents. And so I'll ask them, I'll say, well, hey, I'm really glad you're telling me this. Have you talked to mom and dad about this? And, you know, sometimes they'll say no. Yeah. And I'll go, well, you know, well, how come? And then they'll say something like, well, you know, I just don't talk to him too much, or it would just be weird.
Yeah.
And you know, that's really sad to think that, you know, they're talking, I'm glad they're talking to me, but, you know, they've known me, you know, 2 or 3 hours.
Well, might be the reason they're talking to you, because,
right,
you know, you don't know them that well. But let me ask you that before we get into this wonderful content, the 8 simple tools for raising great kids, which I want to get to, because we all want great kids, right? But there seems to be in the culture today a heavy burden that children carry. I don't know why. You know, I was able to travel the world, and I'd go to very poor countries where the kids seemed healthy. You know, they were poor, but they were smiling, and they were engaging, they were running around. When I look at some children in our country here, at least, it's almost the burden of success, the burden of materialism. Kids seem distant and despondent in so much of the culture today. And you have so many kids doing things, self-harm and other things. What do you think, again, as a child psychologist, what is happening there in our modernity, you know, this modern world that we live in? What's happening to where kids seem more at risk today than when they were years and years ago?
Yeah, Jim, when you say that, the first 2 things that come to my mind is just I see a lot of kids that seem to be busy and cluttered with things that aren't even that important, not that the school's not important, but, you know, with school and sports and activity and Facebook and just all sorts of things just fill their social concern. There's one girl I know, And she was so upset over the concept of having her cell phone potentially removed. And, you know, and she was so serious. It'll ruin my social life. And she was very, very upset to tears about it. And, you know, it just seems that they're so occupied and just filled to the top with things that, again, maybe aren't the right things.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. That really leads to the first question I wanted to cover, and that is, you emphasize in your book the need for parents to be good listeners. That's hard for us as adults because, you know, we know everything.
And so, well, John has said that you know everything.
So, you're right. Yeah. But to listen to an 8-year-old, it can be hard for a mom or a dad because you want to kind of, because of that stress you just talked about, the hurriedness of our lifestyle, we got to do all these things before dinner, got to pay bills, got to do this, got to do that.
Right.
We don't stop and think about the need to listen to our children. Why is that so important?
Well, you know, I think we just maybe naturally just jump into teaching mode too quickly. You know, there's, I think of teaching a lot as myself as a dad and as a psychologist. I think, hey, there's so many lessons we want our kids to learn. And so they have some problem with something. We think, okay, I think I know what to do. And we just, boom, you know, go right into teaching mode. And, you know, one of the analogies I like in terms of listening is, you know, you think about your kids as if they were like a dump truck, right? and a dump truck, you know, there's a couple of similarities. A dump truck, number one, is large. You can put a lot of stuff in it. And our kids have, as we were just saying, you know, they're filled up with a lot of stuff, a lot of concerns, a lot of worries, a lot of apprehensions, you know, things that went bad at lunch today, et cetera. But where a dump truck is filled with, you know, whatever, dirt and gravel, you know, all the things that fill up our kids, to us as parents, are hugely important. I mean, they're like a dump truck filled with diamonds, you know, and we care about everything in that dump truck, and we it's valuable to us. But the other thing about a dump truck is at some point it gets filled up. And when a dump truck is filled up, there's only one thing it can do. You know, it's got to unload. And listening is just letting your kids unload their truck. Because what's going to happen is they're, you know, just like a dump truck, they're going to get filled up again sometime, and they're going to have to unload over and over, and they're going to figure out where the best unloading spots are.
As a busy parent, how do we trigger ourselves to remember to let your child's dump truck unload?
Sure.
What are some things that you can do that are practical?
Well, I mean, a couple things. Number one, I have a picture in my head of a big old yellow Tonka-looking dump truck filled up, no joking, with diamonds. And that's how I picture my kids. And when they've got on load, I picture myself standing in the back of the dump truck, and they're going to, you know, unload it, and I want to catch every diamond coming out of there. And there are three things that you can do to make that happen. Number one, when they're talking to you, when you're listening, you're not shoveling new stuff back in the truck. You know, that'd be kind of silly if you saw some dump truck off the side of the road and it's unloading and some poor schmuck is there, you know, shoveling stuff back in. It's like, dude, it's the wrong time. Well, right, it's the wrong time. So number one is when you're listening, you just listen. You're not adding new information. You can do that later. You're just listening. Number two, you're asking, you're going to ask some questions, but you're asking clarifying questions just to help you understand.
What does that sound like?
Yeah. Oh, easy. It sounds like, well pal, hey, so where were you when this happened? Or, well, hey, when Johnny said that, like, how did you feel? You know, things like that, just to help you understand more and better. And then finally, number three, every now and then, what I've seen in my office is when they get talking, they have a lot to say. And sometimes they're saying so much, it's like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to like lose what you just said. I don't want to forget that. So I'll stop them every now and then, and I'll summarize. And I'll just say, hey, you're saying so much, I don't want to lose anything. Let me make sure I got this right. So when you were sitting at lunch, and Susie's your friend, and she said that thing to you, and you couldn't tell if she was being mean or if she was joking. You just felt like confused, and your feelings were really hurt. Am I getting this right? And she goes, yeah, you're getting that right. Okay, keep on going. And when we do those three things, you know, you listen, you ask clarifying questions, then you summarize, you've got a kid who feels really valued and really listened to, and they go, hey, talking to dad was great.
Yeah.
Talking to mom was great. That really helped me. Next time my truck gets filled up, guess where I'm going to go?
Yeah.
Back to dad and mom.
You know, you mentioned it a moment ago when we started the program, examples of patients that come, your young people that come to you, and they say, well, I really don't talk to my dad, or I really don't talk to my mom. How do you help parents better understand the importance of that so that kids feel, and I'm guilty of it too. I think my own kids would say that occasionally, you know, dad's not really listening right now. I try to do a report card, you know, so I try to do it once a month, but it may end up being once every couple of months. Say, hey, give me a grade. And I got five categories.
That's nice.
You know, my communication style, is that working for you? A, B, C, D, or F.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we talk about it. And that's just one way I can get, for me it works. Because I'm moving so fast, I don't always know how I'm communicating.
Yeah.
But I want to amplify this, the important need for dads particularly. I think moms kind of inherently know how to do this. But us dads, we're, you know, we got to fix the sprinkler system, and you got to mow the lawn, and, you know, all this stuff's going on. Sure. Yeah, talk to me. Go ahead. Talk. Oh, really? That's what happened? Oh, that's great.
Sure.
But how do you really stop and say, okay, you got my attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, for a dad, I think the simple way I would say it is the dad just has to, you know, remember what his goal is. And his goal is, you know, I'm a dad. My goal is to be connected with my boys. And you're just not going to be connected if you're not a good listener.
But that's got to be intentional.
Yeah, that'd be intentional.
Yeah. If you're not a good listener, then you got to say, okay, I'm going to become one.
Yeah, because I want to stay connected. I want to get connected, stay connected, and the route to doing that, at least one of the pathways to doing that, one of the tools is to be a good listener.
Okay, so all of us parents of teenagers,
uh-huh.
Now this is the desperate question. How do you get them out of that one-word answer? This is epidemic with teenagers. They hit some point and you say, hey, how was school today?
Yeah.
Good. What'd you do? Nothing. I mean, what is the deal with that? Or they get the grunt noise. Pfft.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things. Sometimes you can, you know, it just depends on, you know, your timing and of the day and all that. Sometimes if you're doing it, if you have the time to be doing an activity with them and you're doing something, whatever it is, you know, whatever you like to do, even playing a video game or checkers or going, you know, shooting baskets, then you start a conversation. Then you've got them relaxed and then you have a whole different ball of wax there. So sometimes it's that. Other times it's asking, you know, like, you know, quite, it's funny you said that because when I come home from a day and Laura, my wife, asks me, I do the same thing. I don't like that parallel.
You know what? You're right, though.
Yeah, totally. And I thought about it. I thought, hey, you know, I just honestly don't want to take the time. It's actually hard for me to rethink what have I done all day long. It's like, I can't remember everything.
So good covers it.
Yeah. So I when I say, oh, it's fine, it's a good day, I mean, I mean that honestly, but I'm giving her no detail. So, you know, so I can't criticize my kids too much for that, but I can ask them a different kind of question. I can say, well, hey, you know, what did you do at lunch today?
Yeah, so it's open-ended.
Yeah.
And it makes them fill in the blanks.
That'll do it, yeah.
Let me ask you this, too. The power of words, you know, in marriage, when we do marriage programs, we're often talking about the affirmation words.
Sure.
10-1, 5-1. It obviously takes more affirmation than negative comment in a marriage to be healthy. Sure. I'm sure the same is true with parenting, that, you know, little ones need to hear affirming parental guidance more often than corrective, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Kind of verbiage. Do you have a little formula you keep in your head, or
I don't have like a 10-1 formula, but I'm so with you on that. You know, I'm reminded of the Proverbs 18 verse that says, you know, the words of the righteous are a fountain of life. And I always like sometimes for certain scripture verses to put a parenting, you know, spin on them. And I think, well, the mouth of the righteous parent can be a fountain of life to their kids. And that really gets me. And I think, well, I want my words, my mouth, to be a fountain of life for my kids. And depending on the kid, I mean, some kids need a lot of correction, you know, so it's like, oh, okay. But the power of words is huge in a couple ways. I mean, you can talk about just literally changing, like, behavioral habits by really, again, intentionally pointing out positive behaviors. And there's a couple tips I can give there. But even beyond that, not just pointing out positive behaviors, but taking it one step further and pointing out positive characteristics that underlie those behaviors. So instead of, hey, pal, thanks for turning the TV off the first time I asked you, that was pretty good. I mean, that was good. I mean, hey, you have points
take
for that.
It.
Yeah, I'll take that. But you could say, hey, pal, thanks for turning the TV off the first time I asked you, buddy. That was really helpful, considerate, thoughtful, respectful. Take your pick. All those words would apply to that example. And if I see Susie working on her homework and say, "Sweetie, you know, sweetie, you're working so hard. So proud of you. You're a really hardworking girl. You really stick with it when things are tough." Yeah. Now, she wasn't thinking about herself that way 10 seconds ago. She is now. And right. If I do that on a regular basis, I'm changing the way she thinks about herself. Why? Because kids trust what parents say about them.
More so than I think parents even realize.
I think so.
Let me play a little bit of the opposite side of this, sure. Because you have two kinds of kids, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
You have the one who's doing the straight A work, and you know, you ask them one time and they do it, and we usually call those children compliant children.
Yes.
And then you've got that other child who, you know, consistently is needing that correction.
Yeah.
How do we not over-reward and trophy-ize, if I can use that, we coined a new word there, John.
Trophy-ize
everything they do. You know, they get a sticker, they get a banner, a smiley face, and then they walk into the real world with a very high expectation of who they are. I, in fact, talking to a Fortune 500 president, company president, he said in their HR department, they have to deconstruct that overindulgence that parents and mostly moms have provided.
Sure.
And so how do we do the correcting in a way that's honest, not necessarily negative, but it's making the point? I'm sure parents right now listening are saying, but I need to correct my child. How do we do that in the right way?
Well, I heard you say a couple of things there. Like for the pretty compliant kid, I heard you say, well, you know, we might give them a lot of positive feedback, or they might earn a lot of rewards of various natures. I mean, that can certainly be overdone. I've never seen anybody that I've ever met overdo the positive affirmations.
Really?
Okay. I mean, the tendency, just ask yourself, the tendency is to go on the low side. The tendency is for those to
correct the behavior.
Yeah, well, the tendency is you forget to point out the positives. You know, you tend to focus on the negatives. You have to really force yourself to be watching for those positives. And if you're not really thinking about it intentionally, that your frequency goes down. So you have to work just to keep a decent frequency. So I've yet to see somebody actually literally overdo on the verbals. So I don't think that happens much. But in terms of giving correction for any kid, you have to be so careful how you do that. You've got the kid who just needs, you know, maybe correction sometimes, and the kid who needs it a lot. Probably the kid who's in most danger is the one who needs it a lot. But the kid who just needs it sometimes, he might just need, you know, whether it's, just a reminder or whatnot. I guess if I was to sum it up, for either kid, the most important thing about giving correction would be the style with which you give it. With correction, I'd say if I can divide it into two categories, you have the content of the correction. You know, we just did this or that, and so now we're going to have a timeout. Now, you know, video games are gone for the week. You know, the content of what's going to happen. But then the style is the way that you do it. And it's the style that I've seen damage relationships.
What does that style look like? When you talk style, is it anger?
Typically, that would be on the negative side. Yeah, that's the style. It's kind of whether it's anger or kind of a harshness or abruptness.
Shaming.
You know, some form of anger, really. Just this apparent parental style that is, you know, certainly not the way we'd like anybody to correct us. Not the way we'd like anybody to point out our mistake or our fault or our laziness or whatever it was. But the problem with it is it just damages your relationship. Again, we talked earlier about listening, and we could talk about talking. The parent's communication style is one of the biggest factors that is going to influence the closeness of that relationship. Not just when we're talking about the easy things, but when we're talking about the difficult things, that's when being attentive to your style is even more important, because that's when we're at risk for blowing it.
Okay, so 99% of the parents are going, ooh, because I blew it somewhere.
Right.
I mean, so often here at Focus, we get emails and letters and phone calls from parents that have lost their temper or, you know, they've lost it. How would you coach a parent who, loses it occasionally versus the one that is doing that as their parenting style? It's what they're doing.
Sure. Well, I think there's a couple easy things that we can do. Well, I shouldn't say easy, a couple simple things. These are not eight easy tools. These are eight simple tools. First of all is, again, I think it really helps me anyway, just to stay focused, like we were talking about dads earlier, to stay focused on your job. I mean, what are you trying to do here? You're trying to teach your kids the right lessons, the right way. You're trying to stay connected.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do. So I don't want to do anything that's going to damage that. And, you know, I don't want to teach a lesson in a way that's going to, you know, make my kid, like, you know, hate me. Well, he might hate me anyway. Well, no, not necessarily. It's the style.
Yeah.
I know kids, I've unfortunately met kids who were very teenagers, usually very, very distanced and from their parents, and sadly sometimes to the point where there's almost nothing I can do to talk them into even wanting to repair that.
Yes.
That's not because they lost the Xbox, you know, so many times. That's because of a damaging style over years and years.
Yeah.
So in terms of style, I mean, the first thing you do is well, in a real-life practical situation, when you start to sense your frustration rising up and, you start to hear your voice getting, not good, first thing you do is you pause. You just stop for a second. And that second is huge because it gives your brain a chance to catch up and recalibrate and go, wait a second, what am I doing?
Yeah.
What do I want to do? Am I trying to push my kids away or pull them near? If I want to teach them a lesson, do I want to make them open to that lesson or close to the lesson? And my style will do it. And your brain can do all that in just a couple seconds. So you stop, you pause. Secondly, practical tip, when anger starts to take over, things go two ways. They get louder and faster.
Uh-huh.
So you just intentionally reverse that. You start literally talking softer and slower. And when you do that, you literally, no joke, have a 1,000,000% different conversation than you would have had 5 seconds ago. So you pause and then go soft and slow.
Those are good tips. Let me ask you this. You mentioned the dump truck, which my mind is still kind of working on that one back here. You also, in your book, 8 Simple Tools for Raising Great Kids, you mentioned a quote from Dale Carnegie, which I thought was outstanding. I don't know if you have that right there. You have it memorized. Make that statement that Dale Carnegie made in the context of parenting.
Sure. Well, the Carnegie story is he's asked how he's managed to hire so many successful people through his career, and he just gives a simple story. He says, well, when you're going into a mine, picture an old mine back in the 49er days or whatnot, and you're going in there with your pickaxe. When you're going into a mine looking for gold, trying to get some gold, you don't go in looking for the dirt, you go in looking for the gold. And he says, hey, that's how it is for him, but that's perfect for us as parents. Our kids, they got a lot of dirt on them, and they got a lot of dirty behavior, as it were, a lot of bad habits they got to, get fixed up. But, there's two things. They're not a clod of dirt with some gold specks on them. And if we think they are, then we're like very mistaken and our style is going to be way off. They are God's, forgive the corniness, but they are God's gold nuggets. And they've got some dirt, around the outside, need to be polished off, cleaned up a bit, fine. But let's not forget what they are. That's who they are. That's what those characteristics are that we're talking about pointing out earlier. And if I remember that, then I've got a gold nugget here who's got to learn a couple lessons, but I can do that. I can teach him a couple lessons, but let me not forget what I'm working with here.
Hey, Todd, let me ask you this, because so often in Christian homes particularly, and to a degree, I think Gene and I do this too, and I'm not sure about you and Dina, John, but we have a high bar because, we want our kids to behave so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
We understand the scripture. We don't want them to look at things they shouldn't look at. We don't want them to say things they shouldn't say. And so we're constantly correcting, those attitudes and those appetites.
Sure.
Can it be overwhelming for a child if you have a perfectionistic parenting style?
Well, I would think so. I would think we'd want to set the bar for our kids not higher than we set it for ourselves. And maybe that's the corrective that comes in there. Because I do want my kids to learn to do all the things that you just said, but I have to remember two things. Probably number one, I don't do all the things that you just said perfectly, and they're just kids. I've had way more experience than them, and I mess it up. So with a high bar, there's got to be an understanding, and I'm sure there is. But for all of us, there has to be an understanding aspect of grace and forgiveness. And again, that gets back to our word we used earlier, teaching. I'm teaching them. My gosh, they're students. They're just learning. And my job is not to be perfectionistic. My job is to help them learn. And that's why I'm there.
And Jim, there are 8 simple tools in Dr. Cartmell's book. We got to a couple of them. The good news is we can come back next time and cover a few more.
Well, we want to do that. And looking at that list, the 8 list. You created it, Todd. What's the one that really pops for you?
Oh, goodness. I'd have to say, do I just have to pick one? I'd say talking is a real huge one, and teaching's a big one, too.
Okay. We're going to come back next time and talk more about all of them. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, guys. Thanks.
Well, we do look forward to hearing more about engaging with our children and having a stronger connection with them. And that's with Dr. Todd Cartmell next time. Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller.
You know, as Dr. Cartnell was speaking today, my ears perked up when he spoke of our children being God's gold nuggets and how as parents we're going to need to dust off some of the dirt around the edges. But at the end of the day, we're parenting these golden nuggets with so many valuable attributes inside of them. And if we stay focused on that and make sure that we keep the relationship with our child a priority, I think we'll be heading in the right direction. Dr. Cartnell shared excellent advice on how we can teach and guide our kids, and his book summarizes it all into 8 simple tools. He then breaks each tool into 5 short chapters, which is perfect when you only have a second. If you'd like to see your family dynamics begin to thrive, order your copy of 8 Simple Tools for Raising Great Kids and start using the simple tools in your parenting. You'll find it on our website at safamily.co.za, or you can call us on 031-716-3300. And if you missed part of the program, or you want to listen again, or you want to share it with someone, a great way to do that is with our new Focus on the Family Africa app. You can see the range of programs available, read the latest articles, and share the content with your friends and family. It's available for both iPhone and Android. Just be sure to search for Focus on the Family Africa. We'll be hearing more from Dr. Cartnell on tomorrow's program, so do join us for that. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Graham Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you to tune in next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.